even retailers claw back any customers they've lost to Amazon. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton speaks with a Wharton School scholar about retailing in the age of Amazon. And that starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. One quote of Bill Gates gets a lot more traction than his others. It's, if your business is not on the internet, then your business will be out of business. There are entire consulting and analysis shops dedicated to just online enterprise and business. But keeping those shops on retainer may not work for smaller businesses. Cost prohibitive, I would think. So we often turn to authors and professors for guidance. This week, we have more than digital marketplace guidance. We have a success methodology.
The smaller retailers have to look for points of differentiation where they can deliver value in a way that's different.
Amazon disrupts everything it touches and upends any market it enters. On this very show, Amazon has been referred to as the Death Star. Pairing an Amazon strategy with an overall digital strategy helps small and medium businesses survive the Amazon threat. And this author has built a success matrix to prove it. Here we go.
Barbara Kahn, and I'm a professor of marketing at the Wharton School.
And your new book is The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. I'm actually going to start a little higher level because I was finishing my notes for this interview, and I started watching a movie last night. It was made in 1964. And the milkman delivered milk and buttermilk and even eggs to the doorstep. And it got me thinking somewhat about your book in that delivery is a huge part of your success matrix, but also subscriptions seem to be coming back again. And I was like, well, this isn't revolutionary to have subscriptions, you know, like boxes delivered, like I have my meals delivered once a week, is it?
No, you know, that's really interesting because that is true, that the old way of marketing, when you think about those old days, in some sense, the little villages where everybody knew each other, it was very much a personal relationship. It was customer to customer. People knew each other, and you knew the milkman.
Right.
You knew his name even. We've moved way far away from that. And what I think has happened, especially with Amazon, is Amazon has once again recognized the importance of focusing on the consumer. Jeff Bezos says he's maniacally focused on the consumer. And retail in general had moved away from that, and it's kind of ironic.
I agree with you, and I'm glad you brought it right back to Amazon because I enjoy my Prime membership. I think that the numbers are staggering, and I'll put that in the scripting when it comes to Amazon's growth in Prime. But I did notice that some retailers are developing a really robust Amazon strategy, aren't they? I mean, it's kind of like asking a fox into the hen house in some ways, but you have to be careful how you handle that.
Yeah, well, partnering with Amazon is you can't live with them and you can't live without them if
right.
you're Amazon competitors. From the customer point of view, people are pretty happy with Amazon in general because there's so much attention to their needs and it's bringing it back to what is the customer experience and how can we make it frictionless? How can we make it easy? That's kind of Amazon's strategy. And one of the things when I was writing this book that was a kind of an aha to me when I started thinking about it, and it's really central to the thesis of the book, is that retailers had been thinking about themselves as product and operations. If you ask somebody in the retailing industry who's a good retailer, they'll talk about the merchant. And the merchant is the product, the assortment, the design. All of that is quite important. And then how to deliver it, you know, in a cost-effective way, how to maintain inventory, logistics, things like that. That's what people were really focused on. Mm. And they forgot to focus on the customer experience. And what you're describing in the old days really was all about the experience.
Right.
So we've moved away from that.
You know, Professor Kahn, first of all, you said partnering with Amazon. It reminds me, another guest that we had on recently said that partnering with Amazon is kind of like a virus partners with a host. So you have to be careful how you handle it.
Yeah, that's a really good metaphor.
What retailers do you think have understood this and had their own aha moment and have adjusted to the Amazon world?
Well, some of them are competing directly head-to-head, and the one that comes to mind first is Walmart. So Walmart obviously was an operationally excellent company. Walmart was the Amazon 20 years ago, put a lot of other businesses out of business. When a Walmart came to town, all little mom-and-pop retailers closed their doors. There were movies made about that, too, actually. Walmart has been super strong for a very long time. But Walmart, in the age of Amazon, had to realize that this customer experience, this making things frictionless, this delivery delivery, that whole idea of a seamless integration of online, offline, that Amazon is really the biggest leader in, Walmart had to play catch-up in that domain. Mm-hmm. And they had Walmart.com for a while, and I guess that wasn't as effective or successful as they wanted, so they made this huge purchase of Jet.com to bring in all of that e-commerce knowledge and audience and that platform and technology. And so I think they are the biggest competitor to Amazon right now. They're the largest retailer in the U.S., and I think they're second to Amazon in online sales or something. I'm not quite sure how that works now.
I think you're
but
right.
They're definitely very big and can compete against Amazon, but they come at it from a very different position of strength.
So we're talking about two economies of scale, basically, with the corporations we've talked about so far. One of the things in your success matrix that really jumped out at me, not only because I've been a marketing consultant for a while, but because I really value this, and that's alignment. You brought up alignment, and I thought that was a wonderful place to put it with the shopping experience and the pricing and the brand reputation. Does that recipe help smaller retailers also compete with these big boys?
You know, the big, big players like Walmart, maybe Target is starting to get into that realm too. They're not as big, though. They compete head-to-head. But the smaller retailers have to look for points of differentiation where they can deliver value in a way that's different from these big players. And so, for example, I don't think people think about Amazon or Walmart, for that matter, as a brand experience, as luxury brands. If you're really, you know, have a very strong relationship with a particular brand, that's not necessarily going to be sold on Amazon or in Walmart stores. You might get that directly from the luxury store or from different types of retailers. So the brand experience and that brand relationship is one way smaller niche players can win. Another way is to offer really exciting, fun customer experience in the store, different types of ways of doing it. Examples that come up are like Sephora is a really fun customer experience, Costco, TJ Maxx. They're not as big as Amazon or as big as Walmart, but they're all doing pretty well. Their numbers are pretty strong, and they're offering something different to the end user. And in all of those cases, Sephora, TJ Maxx, Costco, I think they're offering an exciting in-store experience.
Well, let's stay here with the physical stores. You know, one of Steve Jobs' biggest disruptions, I think that's very underappreciated, was the reintroduction of the retail experience. Basically, he built these cathedrals to himself that were his retail shops for Apple products. Amazon also, of course, is pushing back out into physical stores as well. Is this a place where some can differentiate?
Yeah, that's a really good example. And it's interesting. Ron Johnson was the one who, with Steve Jobs, you know, really created those Apple retail experiences. And to this day, those stores, now it's under Angela Ahrens, are, you go in a mall or you go in a place and look around and everybody's in the Apple store. So they are really creating a community feel there, an in-store experience that without question differentiates that product. And I do think that that is one way to compete in a very different way. And people still crave that physical experience. They want to touch and feel the product. They want the senses. They want the smells. They want the colors. They want the sounds. You know, they want all of that in real physical. Not every single purchase requires that, mm-hmm. but there's still a lot of purchases that people do want to make in a physical store.
And people aren't jamming on malls, though, right? Because anchor stores are disappearing.
Yeah, so what we're seeing is they label the stores as A, B, and C, you know, and obviously the quality of the mall goes down as the letter gets closer to the end of the alphabet. But the B and C malls, they're offering tired experiences. A lot of that's going to be replaced by online shopping. It's just more convenient. There's no pull to go into a boring mall or one of those malls that are might as well be deserted.
Right.
But the A malls, the flagship stores, the A malls that are offering, they're building new A malls. They're building them with customer entertainment. Entertainment in mind. You know, they're building them around restaurants, around amusement parks, around gyms, so that it's these multi-use malls with beautiful, beautiful stores which are serving as flagships or almost as brand-building exercises. There's ideas like pop-ups, so there's some temporary displays that come and go to add novelty and innovation. So the top malls, I think, are doing okay. It's the B and C malls that we're seeing closing their doors.
Okay. When you were doing your research for this book, which is marvelous, really, it's a primer for anybody who wants to win their customers back. Was there a company that came out to you was like, you know, they have a good product, they have a decent brand reputation, but their store sucks, or there's something else that they could do? Was there a company that you saw in your research that was in a ditch that you think you could pull out?
out, that's kind of hard. As the market is getting harder and harder and more competitive, they're really going to have to start to be more innovative. What I did have the ahas in putting together that matrix is that you have to be good enough at everything and then be the best at something and then leverage that to be the best at two things. That's kind of the strategy that I'm putting forward there. And so the first implication of that is if you're not good enough at everything, you don't have decent prices, decent products, and decent customer experience, those are the stores we're seeing closing down. And people are talking about a retail apocalypse. And if you look at the stores that are closing down, they just weren't particularly good at anything, like Toys R Us, Radio Shack, Circuit City. You can go on and on with these kind of stores that there was just no reason to visit them. Obviously, that's not going to be successful in a world where the competition is so fierce.
It's interesting, too, because the retail sector just reported earnings as we record this, and earnings are up across the sector, 16% year over year. 84% of reports were winners and beats. So there is life here. It's just retailers don't seem to be adjusting to this life very well.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what some people say about Amazon. Whenever I give a talk, I'll say, you know, how many people love Amazon? How many people hate Amazon? It's usually 50-50.
Right.
But what a lot of people will say is that you got to give them this. They've raised expectations in the retail sector. So people were just going along, doing things just so. And finally, somebody comes in and gives them, you know, gives a shot to the whole industry. And the good retailers are responding. And you do see, you know, positive customer traffic to improve in the retailing experience.
My last question would have to be about mobile. It seems to be that takeovers on mobile screens, which are mobile screens are, I would say, our most important screens in our life right now, TV being second. Where are retailers when it comes to mobile? Are we mature here yet, or are we still learning?
I think some retailers are still learning, but I agree. You're talking about, you know, shopping on the phone, browsing on the phone,
right,
that kind of stuff. If you don't have your retail experience position to be viewed on a phone, you're going to be far, far behind. You know, if somebody goes and looks up your website and they are looking at it on the phone and you don't have it configured so they can see it easily on the phone, there's no tolerance for that. So people have to be aligned. Any retailer has to be aligned with a seamless integration from their physical store to their phone platform and to the online platform. And all of that has to be easy for the customer to go from one to another without any hitches. And I do think one of the things that's interesting going forward, mobile for sure is huge. There's no question about that. But I also think the role of Alexa and all of the Internet of Things kind of connected home that's going on is the next place we're going to see a lot of movement.
What did you think when Amazon came out with those buttons for the subscription? Let's say you wanted to order a new Tide or whatever. What would you think of that?
That was the beginning of this whole Alexa thing, and I think that's what they're going to grow on. That notion that common purchases, you don't even have to reorder. You just push a button and it mysterious, you know, comes to your house when you need it. And before long, you won't have to push the button. If you opt in, you know, they'll know when you're going to run out of detergent, and it'll be there just in time. I mean, that'll be so easy that people will definitely buy into that. And that has huge implications for consumer packaged goods, for, you know, competition. If you're locked into a system like that, it's going to be really hard for competitors to come in.
I have a couple of minutes, and I'm going to take them up because you mentioned competition there. You know, Amazon has a lot of things going on. You have AWS. You have, of course, the retail. Are these companies, some of these companies, getting too big and stifling competition?
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody's talking about that. With the power that Amazon seems to have, how is it that there's no antitrust issues? And from what I understand, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know this professionally, but what I've heard is the antitrust laws are about market share within particular product categories, and Amazon does not have big market share within any particular category right now to warrant any kind of antitrust activity. What they have is very high customer share. So they said 100 million people are Prime members, and I heard something like 60% of American households
yes.
are participating in Prime. That is a very big percentage, but it's not of the product class where antitrust typically is. And also the other thing that antitrust gets triggered is if the customer is worse off.
Right.
And so far, Amazon hasn't really done anything that makes the customer worse off. The only thing that I can see that they've done that's a little bit interesting is when they raised Amazon Prime membership 20% in one move. That was the first thing that, and there didn't seem to be anybody blinking about that.
Right.
That was the only indicator that maybe something's going on. But people are talking about separating out the companies. You know, if they took AWS away from Amazon, that's a big profit center for Amazon. So
sure
that
is.
Would change the business.
It sure is. And, you know, if you look at the deal when they bought Whole Foods, if you look at the competitors within that category, they lost so much market share that basically they wrote the check for Whole Foods to go to Amazon.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what retailers like Trader Joe's do in response to this, because they kind of have no online presence, but they have a very, very loyal customer base. And so it would really be interesting to see if the market pressure and what Amazon's doing with Whole Foods forces retailers like Trader Joe's to get online.
Professor Khan, the book is The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. It's a great book. Thank you so much for your time this morning. I hope we can speak again.
Yeah, thank you. It was really enjoyable.
That's Barbara Khan. Khan is the Patty and J.J. Baker Professor of Marketing at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. We are discussing her new book, The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. For links to Ms. Khan's book and all of our source links, please go to KGORadio.com and look for this week's show notes story. I also spoke with a Google executive about how best to use online tools to better compete in the digital space. And that conversation starts now.
Mary Ellen Coe, and I'm the president of small and medium business at Google.
We're going to dig into some of the numbers in a second, Mary Ellen, and thank you for your time. I was looking at the online report, which I'll tweet out, but it shows $67.4 billion economic impact from Google on California. Let's do a drive-by on the methodology for that. How did you come to that number?
So we look at the impact of our search and advertising tools and how that generates activities for businesses, website publishers, and nonprofits. So this looks at the revenue created from our AdWords, from AdSense, and for our ad grants program, which helps not-for-profits.
Okay, perfect. The overall economic impact is no small shakes. It's a really big deal. How do you help small businesses, you know, find more markets and more customers?
One of the things we like to talk about is how many consumers are actually visiting small business websites on a monthly basis, which ultimately creates 3 billion direct connections with small businesses. So that could include calls, it could include bookings or reservations, and that is the foundation for all the economic activity that this creates in the local economies.
You know, it reminds me of the Bill Gates quote, if your business is not on the internet, your business will be out of business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We often businesses think it's too complicated, and there are very simple tools they can use. Google My Business, it's a listing that you can get online, be found in maps, be found in search. We now have a free website building tool, 10 minutes, three easy steps. You can have a customized website. These are the types of things we think are really important for businesses to get out and be able to find their consumers and create opportunity.
You know, I'm kind of an anecdotal learner. Do you have a case study of a business utilizing these tools and have a success story that we could talk about?
Oh, sure. Well, one of those is in California, right down close to me, Zoom Pizza in Mountain View. And this is just one example of the businesses that just make sure that they have a local presence. We see dramatic increases in mobile searches for restaurants near me, pizza near me, in double-digit percentage growth. So Zoom as a business is benefiting from those searches and people trying to find them. People want to know where the pizza is close to them, and Zoom is one of those businesses taking advantage of that.
It's also damn good pie, too.
That's for sure.
It's a little bit of a non sequitur, but my last question would be, do you have any data points on, you know, graduation season, hiring, that kind of thing?
Well, it's interesting. We are seeing a lot of activity, search activity right now. So, for example, in San Francisco proper, we see people looking at not just how to find a job and what job should I be doing, but interestingly enough, skills like how to decline a job offer respectfully, right? So how to negotiate a salary. So we want to make sure that people have access to all kinds of information when they're out for job searching season.
And that's perfect for income equality pursuits as well, which, as you know, in California is kind of a prime thing for Jerry Brown. So good on you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mary Ellen Coe, President, Small and Medium Businesses at Google. Thank you so much for your time.
It's great to talk with you, Jason. Thanks so much.
That was Mary Ellen Coe. She's the president of the Small and Medium Businesses Division at Google. Links to her team's work are in the show notes for this week at KGORadio.com. Coming up after the break, we break down blockchain, as in, what the hell is blockchain anyway?
There's constitutional law built into the chain. There's an arbitration system built into the chain. There's governance built into the chain. So that EOS will be a complete failure if nobody adopts it. But if the community is purely supporting that chain, we're going to get to see versus an Ethereum how a community can make this thing happen.
That's next. So please stick around. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.